It has been observed in many instances in the Vedic scriptures that when the Brahmana or Vaishnavas curse someone in an angry mood, the person who is cursed does not take it upon himself to treat the Brahmana or Vaishnava in the same way. There are many examples of this. For instance, the sons of Kuvera, when cursed by the great sage Narada, did not speak revenge in the same harsh way, but they submitted. Here also, when Jaya and Vijaya were cursed by the four Kumaras, they did not become harsh towards them, rather they submitted. That should be the way of treating Brahmana and Vaishnava. One may sometimes be faced with a grievous situation created by a Brahmana, but instead of meeting him with a similar mood, one should try to pacify him with a smiling face and mild treatment. Brahmanas and Vaishnavas should be accepted as earthly representatives of Narayana. Nowadays, some foolish persons have manufactured the Rudra Narayana, indicating that the poor man should be accepted as a representative of Narayana. But in Vedic literatures, we do not find that poor men should be treated as representatives of Narayana. Of course, those who are protected are mentioned here, but the definition of this phrase is clear from the Shastra. The poor man should not be unprotected, but the Brahmana should especially be treated as representatives of Narayana. It should be worshipped like him. It is specifically said that to pacify the Brahmana, one's face should be lotus-like. A lotus-like face exhibit when one is adorned with love and affection. In this respect, example, the father's being angry at the son, and the son trying to pacify the father with smiling and sweet words is very appropriate. So Krishna says, Mo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha Gaditaya Krishnaya Go Vindaya Namo Namaha. This is when we offer prasadam. We use this as one of the prayers, which is how important it is in our devotional expressions. But why is Krishna so kind to the cows and the brahmanas? You see, this being explained in this verse is that Krishna has some favorite. Is that Krishna is interested in creating some sectarianism, some stratification, some caste system? You see, people have created caste systems, just they've created racism, just they've created sectarianism and things of that nature, or different types of divisions based on superficiality. We also find in Bhagavatam, Kala Sudra Sambhava, that basically in this age of Kali, basically everyone is Sudra. So people are Sudra mentality, not really clear about spiritual life, but somehow some people are trying to go on and trying to rise above that. So the real Brahmana, we look at why the real right Brahmana is important in society, the actual Brahmana. Today's time we are having Brahmanas, but we're understanding that basically we're all just basically sutras and engaged in trying to become spiritualists. So we have some divisions of service. So we look, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, the quality of Brahmana. We also see that the material society is kept intact by virtue of the fact that there's a priestly class. Why? The priestly class are those who are supposed to help keep standard by preaching it, but most important, by living it. So therefore, if they live it and they preach it, then they become strong barometers for helping society to function based on what is the things that are most healthy for the progression of their society. When you don't have clarity about what is proper in society for the well-being of people, then you have could be called communism. Communism, in essence, is actually a government by sutras, where the sutras are running the government, sutras are in the government, and sorry, sutras are being cared for in the government, and the idea that there is no healthy classifications that everything is basically for the people, by the people. Although this sounds good, for the people, government for the people, by the people, but it is a farce. Just as we see democracy sounds good, but it's a farce. Why is it a farce? It's a farce because Prabhupada said that he created demon created this. It's a farce because it appears to be a system that is concerned about the best needs of the people, where in fact it is not. You say, well, what is the difference between democracy and totalitarianism? What is the difference between democracy and oligarchy? So totalitarian or Deepak kind of arrangement, totalitarianism, is a situation where you just have, you know, force upon the people. But it's clear, it's obvious, and there's no apologies by that. It says you have extreme autocrat, then it's just force imposition on the people. You have an oligarchical arrangement. It's an arrangement where a few leaders lead the masses, but the leaders, they choose amongst themselves their own leadership. So it's sort of similar to like the Catholic Church, even similar to the GBC. The Catholic Church, so amongst the cardinals, then they select the Pope. Not that the people in general select the Pope. They may have something to do with those who may finally come to be bishop or whatever, or cardinal. But then amongst the cardinals, then they select the bishop, the archbishop, etc. And then we see the idea of democracy, which supposedly means for the people. But democracy, of course, means who is able to tactfully influence the masses to push their agenda. So it's like it's not that anybody can run for governor, for president. They say you can, but you can't. Because unless you have a certain amount of money, certain amount of connections, there's no question of running. It's so sophisticated, they can define, if you were to run for an office, how much you need minimally. Maximally, that is different. People use all kinds of money. Minimally, if you can't get that together, then you can't actually run. Because you won't be able to participate in the game sufficiently. So the illusion is there because, at least in the monarch, in the oligarchical arrangements, it is clear that there are some leaders who are in charge and their decisions are being given the most attention, and then the individuals can make the leaders accountable. But in the democracy, where supposedly the people are voting and they're thinking that they have a vote and freedom of choice, etc., but not really, because it's somewhat of an illusion. It's based on the media influences, based on various types of alliances, and we see the real power of manipulation is going. So one doesn't usually know who is really controlling in a democracy. You see somebody who is who's a minister, someone who is taking the role of senator, governor, president, whatever, but you don't really know who's actually, but you understand power and money is influencing someone. And so when there is the monarch, and then you understand that the power lies in the monarch, in the kingdom, and it's administered in a certain way based on the kingmakers, etc., etc. And you also know clearly that if that is not followed, who is held responsible, and who should be brought down, who should be changed, etc. Like this example, when Avena was improper king, so he was warned by the Brahmanas. Again, the Brahmanas were to be an exemplars of proper lifestyle, and then they could draw attention. This is not the proper government arrangement. People are not satisfied. People are being abused. People are not being properly protected. People are not being properly cared for. So now, you must change. But they didn't change. So they chanted mantras. It took them out of position. Now, such people having such power, isn't that dangerous, Brahmana? But we look at what a position, how a Brahmana lived, which would give more sense of guarantee of healthy use of this power. First, a Brahmana could never take salary. because he was not to be a paid personality working based on influence of where the money's coming. So immediately we can see that, you know, no one is a real Brahmana in this. The Brahmana is never to work for anyone. I mean, again, this would put imposition on the Brahmana in terms of his allegiances. That means they could do various types of, could do various types of services for the people, or could do some enterprise, but not that they would be subjective to where they would have partisan interest. Brahmana was to know scriptures, to be able to speak scriptures just as well as he knows his own name. Immediately, in any discussion, any argument, Brahmana would be able to draw, it's like a lawyer, a very good lawyer. The lawyer is to know the law, be able to constantly pull on the law to show what is proper, what is precedent, and to be able to explain what is improper, always based on the law. Therefore, one was to spiritual scriptures and philosophy just as well as one knew one's name, or as well as one knew one's language. It's like a language of its own. So one was always scrutinizingly studying scriptures, living by the scriptures. Brahmanas would like to renounce this, and that they would make themselves available to guide and to preach and to serve. And their livelihood was based on the fact that as they help people, people would offer some donation, some clothes, some food item. People, they would be offered something, and this is how they would live. So their own livelihood would be based on the purity of their performance. And so, and we see if they were engaged in yagnas, then they were to start the yagna by chanting the mantras to start the fire. That's where somebody had been embezzling money, somebody had been having illicit affairs, someone had not been strict in their sadhana, then as they were trying to perform various rituals, they would not be able to carry them out because they would not have the spiritual potency. And so everyone would know this is a problem. So you see, the Brahmanas were the caretakers of the deities, because their whole life was about the standard. Therefore, they had the responsibility of seeing that Krishna would always be kept in the center, that there would be Arjuna Vigraha, that it would always be a way to remind us about our particular duties. Now, in this particular verse emphasizes that in this, some cases where we see like Narada, cursed the Kuberas, and they did not respond any ill will. See, how does somebody curse someone? And the scripture says, just accept it, just honor it. Well, a real Brahmana would never do anything improper, and understand the consequences of what it would mean for him and society. And so, if there was some case, like in the Kuberas, where they were so dull that they needed help by putting them in some unusual situation for the ultimate spiritual elevation, then that was done. So Narada, by putting this curse on, he arranged for them to be able to get the association of Krishna. Therefore, such Brahmanas are like doctors, the proper doctor, in the sense that you have a pill, sometimes the pill is nasty, sometimes it tastes, you know, tastes, and that is all right. Sometimes the shot is painful. But anything a minister, it's always in the sense of, how can I help this person's consciousness? What is the best thing I can do to help this individual become more God conscious? And so, such Brahmanas, they were always selfless. So even if they did something seemingly harsh like that, it would be understood that they were proper Brahmanas, there would be some great auspiciousness that would come from it. And therefore, the patient cannot get angry at the doctor because the doctor had to give him a shot, because then he's realizing that this is going to benefit the system or whatnot. And so the warning is, be careful, because if you have some medicine and it's not taken properly, then you will not get the proper benefits. Of course, you can see the dangers in such a system. The dangers, what happens if you have people who are Brahmins who are not acting the same? know what has happened and brought about the caste. Is that the people who were born in families where the members of the family were Brahmanas who had been executing Brahminical activities, and because they were born in that environment, they immediately themselves professed Brahminical status without paying the price, without walking the walk, but simply using it for leverage. So it happens in all situations. You see this happen constantly in, you know, different political arrangements, religious arrangements, where people use power for sovereign concern. It happens in business, happens in politics, happens everywhere. That is a danger. That authority is good, is necessary for any kind of function for things to happen, but also dangerous in as much as that if it's abused and it's of course destructive. It's like being a parent is a proper and a good thing. But at the same time, being a parent means authority, responsibility. So the question is, does one use it in a accountable way, or is someone a parent using it in a manipulative or abusive way? But there's some parents who are abusive. Some parents who used to send their children out, don't let them go to school, they send them out just to work in the most excruciating situation to bring their own money. Child labor, in some countries, child labor is a very serious thing, serious abuse. But that is there. And there's some parents who are drug addicts, who have brought children to the world, and they don't really give much attention to them. And some parents are into various kind of perverted lifestyle, and they again bring their children into prostitution or to homosexuality, etc. We engage them in incest. So we can see the power of parenthood, parenting, and the significance and how the parent is as much responsibility over the formation of the conscience of the child. We can also see the danger when there is improper parenting. So we don't throw out the conception of parenting because there's some parents who are improper. But we minimize how important it is. Similarly, we don't throw out the conception of leadership. We throw out the conception of the importance of priests, the priestly class. But we also realize the danger that's involved if parenting is not properly executed. It is a must that is necessary, but it is also dangerous if it is not perfect. It is a must that there is a priestly class to make some decisions, to guide, to try to show more by their own examples, and to be able to constantly remind others of what the scriptural considerations are. And by this, then there is culture. And by this, then there is spiritual life. Otherwise, there is so much speculation. There is so much ambiguity about what is proper. There's so much confusion and so much unhealthy considerations. So constantly we see things that are most powerful, if they are not understood or not used properly, they become the most destructive. So parent has this, it says it's in the Bible, it says this, mankind, humankind, having dominion over other species. So that's good, and that means caretakers. That same dominion can mean exploitation. So the power is there to oversee and to caretake. The danger is there if one does not see themselves as the servant of the caretaker, but simply as the dictator or as the manipulator. The parent does not think of him or herself as the caretaker for the child. Simply see that I brought these children in the world, now they have to do this and that to me. Well, so can be exploited. The parent who doesn't kind of look at the greatest needs of the child, will simply stagnate the kid by imposing in an artificial way, allowing the child, not allowing the child to have a certain amount of expression of freedom. So there must be the balance of some guidance and monitor, but at the same time, not imposing, where it's completely unhealthy. So this is the process of the devotion. The process is that we honor spiritual hierarchy in the sense that spiritual hierarchy means power, manipulation, control, and less work. Material hierarchy usually means one has certain advantages while others have to suffer or to deal, to accept, because they're not on the same part. The spiritual hierarchy means that one is supposed to be now more accountable, more merciful, more compassionate, and more positioning themselves to be the servant of everyone. Because of that, then that person is supposed to be respected because of the fact that they have renounced more, they dedicate themselves more to the process of service. And based on that, then that is honored, and the system is strong, the system goes on. And when it's not honored, of course, then it becomes a problem in such ways. So, for instance, we respect someone, we love someone, because they are lovable and they are respectful. And we find it hard to respect someone and love someone if we feel that they're not lovable or they're not respectful. Or if we know, thinking that they're not respectful, then of course, it is very difficult to respect someone. So the Brahman is supposed to bring out the devotion of everyone by being respectful, by being properly concerned. It says right now some people are mourning Mother Teresa's departure. Why? Because people respected her. Why? Because she did things that most people did not do, but they value as good qualities. She had many, many acts of selflessness. So because of that, then she was given honor and respect. Not that she had to demand for people to respect her, the opposite. But because she showed that she was more dedicated to selfless service, to helping humanity, than most, then people respected because they saw this quality of self-sacrifice. So this is the way that Brahmins are supposed to be appreciated, because people distinctly see this person is understanding scripture better. This person is more available to try to assist and to serve. This person's life sends a greater signal that they have dedicated themselves to the service of sadhu, of guru, of Krishna. This person is very much concerned about the power of recognizing the power of maintaining the proper scripture, culture, and spiritual family. And this person is available to assist me selflessly. And these are some attributes. So we'll stop there. Are there any questions? You see, all these things can be abused, like anyone in any position of power can abuse their power, or can just become stagnant, or just demand or just enjoy. But the Brahman is supposed to not be timid about seeing that order goes on, structure goes on, see that the mission performances of what's necessary goes on. But the strongest message is sent by the Brahmana is his or her own example and dedication to the things that they say. And then they encourage others because they themselves have become so much a part of it. Because of that, Krishna is with affection to the thousands of the Brahmanas. Because the Brahmanas have been always there as like barometers to help to remind everyone what is necessary for spiritual growth. And they're there to make the selfless sacrifice in spite of many complexities. So Krishna is very pleased that they will be the glue in helping various orders of society to understand better how to do their work, get the maximum benefit of it. Otherwise, we have, like we have now, you know, I mean, we see some interesting things that just happened recently. I'm just mentioning how, see all these unusual deaths taking place with very powerful people. Many people, they won't learn anything from it. They won't realize, one, that everybody's got to go. And two, doesn't matter how famous you are, or what endowments you have, you still also have to check out. Here's two of the most famous people, famous women in the world, have just, you know, left their bodies at the short span. Millions of people all over the world, they just, you know, worship the idea of being a queen or being a princess or being able to be a part of, you know, royalty. And someone like Princess Diana was like their idol, someone who had such freedom and such status in the world. Wherever she goes, people are just in awe. And here, the Mother Teresa, that people of all races, all religions, all political orientations, to respect her. This little old lady, who is, you know, very, very firm in her commitments, and also very strong about her ideology. She didn't live a life of trying to please people, just superficially, but she lived a life of giving herself in a very pious way. And because of that, now, you have the states are going to replace those people and so on. But people are missing the point behind that is that it doesn't matter how much prestige, how much wealth, how much influence, how much power you have, that is all just extremely temporary. And it's just going to come, it's going to go, just like that. So the devotees sometimes get too distracted by their material involvements. It's foolish because they should know better. We have to cover ourselves materially. But all that is also just going to be good. Simple. And what's going to be there, what's left now, is where the spiritual credit is. So someone like Bernstein, she was a little humanitarian also. But sometimes these royal class of people, they leave the body, they come back as invalids, as retards, as paupers, sometimes in the same kingdoms, but they themselves have so much influence and control. Because now they have to have come at such a level to be able to understand more about why there's a need to be freed of free most into nature. So the karmic factor is very powerful. And we see that they're working at any given time, coming upon us. Catching up with us, that's what we are now. We're making karma now for the future. We're arranging our future. We know about the things that we do. So we want to be careful that our spiritual life is our property. There's so many devotees here, they still don't quite understand. You know, there's so many things that their spiritual life is not strong. They're feeling their rounds, they're not taking their rounds as serious. Like when devotees come to programs, you know, once or twice a week, some people, they don't come for weeks. When they have services, they don't care, services aren't so strong. So, what does that mean? It means they're not serious about the commitment. So Krishna will respond based on our own performance. Krishna will respond based on our consciousness and our activity. So if we are acting whimsically, then our results will be so and so. This one asked me the other day, the Reddy comes around, he said, what do you think of me? I said, what do you think of the employers who work in your corporation, in your business, who come, you service once every couple of weeks, every couple of months, and then they have something to do, or there's things to be done, and they themselves do not do it. I said, how do you feel? How do you feel you have a business, you have a project you have to do, and then someone appears, and they are acting very nice, and then they disappear for weeks. So how do you feel in trying to organize the workforce, and that's the nature? Are you happy about that person? Do you feel good about that person? Don't you feel disturbed that poor person brings, even can demoralize others, weakens others? Don't you feel disturbance that area of work then causes some stagnation. But you feel disturbed that here this work you're doing is serious and I'm not going to be on time. But you feel disturbed that the person doesn't see what the ridiculous position that they're playing. So many times you think it's very clearly when it comes to the mature orientation, when it comes to spiritual, take on a whole different consciousness. Sometimes people, when it comes to their personal needs, their material needs, they're very clear, they're very regimented, they're very regulated, they're very competent, very alert. Then when it comes to now trying to serve Supreme and his representatives, then we cannot do what we do, what we do, what we don't do. We think it's okay. But what can we say? If we are, that is our move, then we are just foolish, because we are like the patient who goes to the doctor, pays the money, gets a prescription, but then doesn't take it. So they're wasting the money, and they're prolonging their sickness, and they're really hurting themselves in a sense. So that is unfortunate. But some people do like that, because they're so addicted to being self-centered. So they find it that if there's an inconvenience when it comes to the spiritual situation, they just don't play into it. When there's an inconvenience when it comes to their sense gratification, they immediately find a way to get around it. They immediately find some way to activate situations that will let them have that sense gratification. So what does that message mean to Krishna, his devotees? That message means that our greatest interest is still in sense gratification. So therefore, that summons more things that will accommodate our interest in sense gratification. My greatest interest is the spiritual. We are tolerating other things. Then it means we're summoning greater spiritual benefits and connections. So a devotee is supposed to tolerate material energy, tolerate material circumstances, because of what we have to deal with. Not that it is any way a priority in our life. Whatever is most important in our lives, then that is what is arranged for us to have more and more of that. But what is most important is our mental anxiety, we get more of that. What's most important is our finances, so we have more financial problems to work with. What is most important is our spiritual life, then we'll have more of that. And gradually have the other thing for balance, but Krishna will compensate. So it is just that simple. That is difficult because, again, in the society that's nicely oriented, there's so many brahmanas who are living a life of selflessness. So there are good examples kind of imposed on the atmosphere. And then more people, in a good way, and more people begin to also become selfless and dedicated to the spiritual life and the priority. When any of those things is weak, you become confused about what is the best. Therefore, what becomes the standard is whatever seems to bring in the most prestige, the most money, and the most power. But then we see from these examples that those things are very illusory. Buddha just passed one of the richest men in the world. And so, but now, so what does that amount of money mean? The hells he's going to have to go through are unlimited. Kind of simple stuff he's been doing. At the same time, he had so much money. The richest man in the entire planet. But now, so much suffering because of that. So whether you are rich, whether you are very famous, for this reason or that reason, it's a very temporary thing. And the real issue is, now, what did you do with that stuff? What was your consciousness? In most cases, people just have to keep on visiting again and again and again Yamaraj or another prison sentence. Yamaraj will say, so, why you didn't take shelter of spiritual life? There are saints available. in the scriptures. So this is what you mainly were interested in. Now here you have a body, an environment that allows you to be able to do that thing more. But finally you are no longer making any material thing as a priority. Hare Krishna. So, any questions, any comments?
Yesterday, when we were at Channel 32, the young lady who was on the stage at the restaurant when I was older, she was explaining that her father-in-law had left his body. And one of the questions that she had, which I'm not so sure if I answered properly, was how much was he aware of his past? In other words, it was just, of his life and the people that were there, and she wanted to know, was he there acting as a protector, for example, for his grandchildren? And, just having some very surface information about, what happens to the soul after it leaves the body in terms of being aware for a while, but then it travels on to the board where it's next life is, pretty much
determined. Some of the nature of the board, Yamaraj and his team, to help to equate or relate, to help to acquaint the sinner with all of their sinful activities and the opportunities. It's an evaluation, not just a sentence. It's an evaluation process that goes on. So the individual becomes aware. And that's very painful. They become aware of chances they had, opportunities they had, and what they did and what they didn't do. And now, then they get a sentence based on that. And, of course, many souls, while they're in the womb at a certain point, they also become aware of so many, many things related to past life. Then, of course, when you come into this world, gradually begin to phase out.
Mm-hmm. And what is that? Answer that spoke about, and we know that the soul has these qualities of being eternal, physical, knowledgeable. At that stage, is there still some remnants of the mind that's actually experiencing that pain?
Yeah, there's always the mind is always with us until we go back to the kingdom of God. Subtle body is part mind, intelligence, ego. Death means physical body gone, subtle body takes the soul. When it's going to, so is in case and so by. So that includes mind and all that other stuff. So those impressions are affecting the mind because that is part of the so by. That's why, even though we're not fully conscious, we have certain inklings related to our past lives, certain phobias, certain interests, certain directions. That's all part of the dormant expressions of. From the subtle body. The real issue is that why doesn't Krishna let everybody be aware of all the stuff they did in their previous life so that they can completely know what's happening and then to maybe change this or that? Why should someone be held accountable now when they're not aware of what they did previously? One is that we are aware of subtlety because we have some basic understanding of what's ethics, what's ethical, what's moral, what's proper, what's not. But it is also a way to allow us to have a start to where we can now have to act upon our free will. All these things are happening based on free will. And if our desire to know is strong enough, if our free will is of that nature, then Krishna will let us be able to become aware. There are people who are very, very conscious of their previous lives. The people who are slightly conscious. It has something to do with desire also. If we want to sin and not be accountable, then Krishna will give us that ability also. He gives us the ability to be able to slightly forget. So we can sin and be unaccountable, and sin and be unaccountable, and sin and try to just pursue our own interests. It'll give you more facility to pursue our own interests. And once we start trying to become more selfless, it begins to help us to see more about the consequences of what we do. You're helping to see about the consequences that even related to other lifetimes. it's like we're, our actions are sending out a message. I want to be dulled. I want to forget. I just want to live for the moment. I want to live for the adoration distinction. I want this. So, which forgives the body and conscience analysis. So most people, they're sinners, and they want to sin without any sense of compunction or regret. They're not there. So therefore, they're not being kept aware. But still, even though Krishna is arranging that, he's holding them accountable. Even though the guy who wants to rob the bank, he's ultimately being given intelligence by Krishna, because Krishna is ultimately the source of all intelligence. Even though the super soul is giving some intelligence to do this, because the person wants to do it, it's still, the individual now has to suffer for it, pay the price for it. Yes.
Does that mean that free will then is an expression of our desires? The way that we exercise our free will is an expression of our desires?
Exactly. Okay.
So the ability to say, thy will, not my will, is ultimately has to come from desire to really surrender.
That's true.
At what point does the this soul, the spirit soul, enter the body? At what point does it enter a different thing?
What point does it? Is it manifest in the physical body?
Yeah.
There is life, you know, everywhere. And I think there are different theories. There's theories that, like with the abortionists, they're considering that the soul is not manifested yet in some cases. In most cases, they don't even care, they don't think about it. Not even an issue in some cases. We understand there cannot be growth without the presence of life. So we see that at the most, you know, early stages, a few days, that there is the symbols of life. And there's growth. And we can see distinctly, in just a few weeks' time, you can detect the heartbeat, and then later the brain waves. And so it's obvious that there is life, there is the presence of the soul. And the opposite of that is that you can have a body, say when someone is stillborn, so the body is there, but because the soul isn't anymore, then there's no life anymore. It's strange how people can think there's growth and there's no soul. Another question?
Mm-hmm. I have two. One we're discussing right now, mm-hmm. and then another one. Totally different. But when the soul shot out of the body for whatever reason, and there can be some disorientation,
mm-hmm.
and there can be, you know, the you know, the soul can stay in a ghostly state. How then does the soul at that time determine, after staying around for, you know, a period of time, that they then want to move on, or does Yamaraj come and get it, or how does that work?
It's the same as in a physical body. Does the individual decide that they're going to be famous? The individual decide that they're going to be sickly. The individual decide that they're going to be an invalid. Yes and no. Yet their own thoughts and actions are definitely a major factor. But that's also regulated or monitored by higher authority. So similar. But the ghost body is also, it's a subtle body. So how long is the entity stays in the body? What the experiences are? It's also based on a combination of the free will, or use or misuse of free will, versus the consequences associated with that use of free will.
In terms of the scripture you were talking about, the Brahmana class, and the role and responsibility, you know, I'm experiencing in the institute that there is just, you know, the sheer lack of motivation and enthusiasm and leadership coming from us as Brahmins. And sometimes the overall atmosphere then affects one's, you know, one's individual enthusiasm and motivation. And, you know, I was even told, and I hope I can say this without saying someone's name, but that a member of the Institute has also witnessed and made a statement and observed that, you know, your overall participation amongst the devotees. And that even when you hear, there's not even the, I don't know, courtesy respect to come, you know, and be with you as, as their father, as their guru, when you hear it. And so it's even, you know, affecting those who come. And, you know, I know, so I'm just wondering if it's a time period we have, if it's going on in other temples, what can we do to, and I know, you know, I heard you say that we can be examples of that. And then what I see when that happens is that, you know, the more you take on that particular role and do, the more you almost enable others to be where they are and even to do this. So it's, you know, I've been questioning and trying to find out, you know, what the balance is and then what, you know, what I can do, what we can do as for an initiative.
Yes, of course. Yeah, it's not only happened in other temples, it's happened all over the world. It's not even a spiritual thing per se. You see, all over the world, people are getting bewildered, confused, in most cases, becoming gross, or grosser, because the sin has become so strong, so powerful. People are so much struggling just to survive. Survival issues are really serious. Economic issues. You know, the economists are constantly, you know, looking at generations now that people are not being able to have or function with the same asset. You know, it's the first time in history that you have a generation that is less financially secure than the previous. So you have so many, you know, young adults now who have to live with their parents or have to get money from their parents, even though they may be working, you know, husband and wife may both be working. Their own jobs, their own, what the money produce does not allow them to buy the kind of house that their parents had, in most cases. And we see that, you know, never at the time there's been such a strong infiltration of drugs. And that's both illicit and pharmaceutical. I mean, what's the most popular drug now? It's, you know, on the open economy, it's Zantac. Prozac is second. Zantac is for ulcers. Prozac is for, of course, depression and cancer things, the mental state. So this is a signal. But see, for us, it's no excuse, because we're always understanding that as mind gets stronger, we have to be stronger. We have to be more focused. And that we're not supposed to just be moved by the whims of what is happening in the social, economic, and political arena. I mean, these are reasons I was, you know, asking devotees to, you know, they showed that film about the Federal Reserve System, showed the film, of, you know, we had to give a book about transformation. So I want you to get a better idea is the kind of evil that you're a part of in being in this material world. The evil that you're a part of in just being in America. It's very evil. These countries, one country has another. And the kind of evilness that's involved in most, you know, the most recent leadership. They don't think that evil is there, and somehow because you're a devotee, that, or somehow because you are just a nice person, you know, going to work and doing your stuff, you're not being influenced by it. So when the plague is there, when the disease is there, then what happens? It means you have to build up your immune system stronger and stronger. But we should understand that, you know. First of all, we got to be sympathetic and not just think people just admire. They just don't care. It's not really like that. It's just that they are damn lazy and they're not using what they have. Because we all have the ammunition to be able to rise above some of these things. But, you know, everyone is being blasted now. If you interview most devotees, you'll find that 4 or 5 years ago, they were not in the same kind of precarious financial situation as much as they are now. You'll find for many of the people that their situation now, in general, that they're finding just more difficult. and just being able to remain enthusiastic about life, we find it more, you know, more difficult in their relationships. But it doesn't have to be that way. Only that way, if we're not taking the message seriously, if we take it sufficiently, if we're serious enough, then even though that stuff is happening, we won't get weaker, we'll get stronger. Because in spite of that, we'll gain so much realization, understanding, so much strength from such. But I keep saying that we can't go on our previous year's strength and think that that's going to be enough to be able to keep us in sufficient heights at this time. You know, for instance, we ask you all to read, you know, once a day. So we are, I mean, 1 hour a day. So one reason we're doing that too is so that there's a greater sense of understanding, realization, that you'd be better preachers, but also, most important, so that you are clear about the philosophy and how to use it. It's like telling you, okay, the war is going on, it's accelerating. Now you got to take on real strong ammunition. Those who don't, then of course, they're more likely to get wounded. Now the other side of that, that's even more unfortunate, is for those who are trying to do right, but getting too discouraged because others aren't. Because somebody else is not going to take their, they're not going to, you know, have their weapons, you have to kind of encourage others. There's no question of getting too discouraged by them. Then we have to be sad that we cannot be strong enough to raise others, or sad that we cannot complement the other person's situation a little better. Now the variable is, when you do that, then people think they're okay, and maybe they do less and less. If the environment is strong, someone is doing improper, they will be embarrassed by the improperness, and they will change, or they will leave the environment. When the environment is strong, then it becomes even clearer of what is necessary, and people then get picked up by that. Otherwise, they feel too much not ready to do it, and they just feel disturbed to the point where they just don't feel good at being around. You've seen several people have come into the Institute who then left. You look at why that 99% of people leave, and you see they're not ready to raise their standard to what the call of duty is. So some came because it was a nice social thing. Some people thought it was more cultural. So they stayed for a while. Then they start seeing that most of you start committing more. Then some people, they start moving to the side because they were interested more in the expression of connecting with some knowledge, some enjoyment, but not necessarily with changing their own lives. So we're always going to have some people who are going to have that thought. But now, if we take initiation, then we are expected to be able to do that which is necessary, which means that we expect to be ready to make sacrifices. See, no one is going to, Krishna Guru is not going to ask anybody to do anything that's going to, you know, destroy their life. In the sense that you just ignore the material life to the point that the person's material life just gets destroyed and they can't function if they're just trying to just do only spiritual things. Spiritual life is practical. But definitely, the duty of the spiritual master in Krishna is to help to revitalize the dormant consciousness. That means to definitely help to remind us and help us to guide us for how keeping spiritual life as the priority. Even as we're doing any material thing, it should always be based on, I got to do this stuff because this is going to help me to do this and that. And this is going to help me to access this spiritual connection. It's going to allow me to do this so I can be able to do more spiritual this, that. It all should always be based on. I'm working because I need money, because I need to get food and shelter so that I can be able to do more of my spiritual life. I need to have good health, so that I can be able to do more of my spiritual activities. I need to avoid these type of people because it'll interfere with my spiritual activity. I need to connect with these type of people because this will help, this will enhance my spiritual understanding and activities. I need to be more careful about anger, about fear, about such things because it's a distraction from my spiritual consciousness. Everything becomes more and more based on what is spiritually correct. So what does that mean? It means more, to that degree, we have placed ourselves more at Krishna's lotus feet. Krishna will receive us first. You guys question. Yeah, it's in this, we understand that many people are having more economic problems. Therefore, their mind is more fixed in that way. And the energy is in that way. Because of that, then there's a tendency to kind of put the similar spiritual life on hold, or to put the spiritual things in extracurricular based on whatever else is going on. And of course, that's unfortunate. But even if they're expert, even if they become very successful in those material things, what does it mean? In a few years, it's gone anyway. Even though Ambuto had so much money, but what does it mean? Even though the mothers had so much fame, Mother Teresa, Diana, it's all over now. Now they had to go, they're going before the comic board. So many things are going to be put out. What you did, what you didn't do. And so the case of where so much concern was for people, so we get more strength to help even more people in the next time. But the interest was enjoyment and drawing mainly in the rich and the famous and little stuff, tokens here and there. You get more chance for that kind of exposure. But maybe this time, as a as a gardener in the palace or something. So, karma is very unusual. Like Srila Prabhupada explained, in the case of, let's say something like Nehru, he was born in India, so much against spiritual lifestyle, spiritual people, spiritual culture, he's so much interested in the progress of the West, seeing religion and things like that as actually being a disturbance to the country. But his next life, obviously, he incarnated in Sweden, okay? So he wants to be Western, so he took birth in Sweden, one of the richest countries in the world. But now, there's a dog. They can have unlimited qualifications, be the pet of some wealthy person, and now he can do a lot of things without accountability. So here he is sinned and such that he's not even allowed to come back to the human platform. So this is the nature of the problem.
Picking up on the comment a little bit in the discussion, I've been thinking a little bit about personal responsibility. Has personal responsibility to get into all this? And I think what prompted that these questions in my mind is noticing a little bit how other spiritual organizations that are in the motor movement seem to get people so engaged and so involved, and yet there does seem to be something of a struggle here. Does personal responsibility play a role, or does it just come back down?
Well, let's look at that close. In politics, people get very much engaged. Sometimes they're paid, sometimes they're not. People work so hard for campaigns. In education, some people, they get small salaries, but they work very, very hard. In some churches, some mosques, some synagogues, some people work very, very hard. In all those cases, they have personal responsibilities. But why do they work hard? Because they take whatever they're doing as important enough where they want to be in it, with it, and they want to make it happen. So there's never a time that somebody doesn't have an important responsibility. Or just take the most basic situation, a job. In any job, we also have personal responsibilities. In terms of our life, in terms of our families, in terms of our hygiene, in terms of our maintenance. We have so many personal things. But we want that money, we want that job, and so we organize our personal life so that it doesn't take away from what we have to do for that job. Sometimes we may be sick, we have to put some things on hold, sometimes in emergencies. But basically we organize our life so that we can go to work every day, we can be pretty much on time, we can do whatever is called upon us, we get paid. So there's never a time your personal responsibility is not a consideration. But it's a matter of what's really important for you. Same people who have difficulty in doing something in the institute being really liable and accountable. When it comes to their own personal concerns, they are Muslims. I mean, I didn't just speak very open. I was talking to Brahma yesterday, and I was like shocked. He took me to the studio, and I was shocked how confident he was when he came to his work. The whole time he was on the phone, you know. He was, you know, people were calling him all over different places, different businesses, different jobs that he was doing. You know, electricians, foremen, all kinds of people, and he was right there. It's got to be done. It's there. It's this problem. It's that problem. This could cause us, you know, illegal complications. This, you know, we got this, you know, we got this couple, you know, million-dollar country. We got to finish it on this time. Where's that guy? Somebody, you know, it was messed up a machine. It's going to slow this thing down. It's going to slow that thing down. He was on it. Boom, 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 boom. This is what the codes are. This has to be done. That has to be done. I said, simply amazing. When it comes to spiritual life, you can't be consistent about anything. How do you feel when one of your supervisors, one of your coordinators, one of your foremen doesn't show up or doesn't carry out their work? And to what degree weakens the whole project? How many things you have on time if you don't do it on time? Then you don't get the money. You know, you lose money every day, every week, if the product is not finished. In some of these cases, it's dangerous. Somebody doesn't put the equipment in the proper place. Somebody misuses it. Somebody doesn't do their work. The building can collapse. People can be hurt. People can lose their lives. How do you feel if you have somebody who is not doing their work, who appears every couple of days, 2 days, and then they're gone for 2 or 3 months? And they come back to you in a very humble mood and do the same thing again and again and again and again and again. So often it's amazing how we put ourselves in a whole different space when it comes to our spiritual life. And when it's things based on our money, based on our gratification, based on our pleasures, based on our own interests, you know, central interests, when we are sharp like anything. I mean, I was astounded at the amount of maintenance, the things that he oversees, and how clear he was. Boom. Phone ring, one person off, another person calls. You know. I'm looking for these drawings, this thing, that thing. It's you know, it's in the second office, it's in the third drawer, you know, and this back, boom. In the phone, somebody was called back, boom. He was like, boom, boom, right on it, like anything. You know. Whether it was physical work, whether it was legal codes, whether it was interplay of devotees. You know, who knows about, you know, what was done there? That tall Italian guy, remember him? He joined us last month. You know, see him. You know, he just, you know, everything was clear. Boom, in and out. Boom, again. You know, he's thinking. So, it's not that he has a personality of just being unaccountable. It's based on. Well, it's not that he's lazy. It's a matter of where the priorities are. And then when he drove me home, I says, so this is your off day, isn't it? He says, yeah. I said, are you getting paid for all those instructions you gave people a day? He says, no. I said, just see. He said, the nature of the job is that he has to be available. Even when he's not on the job, he has to be, I mean, he's controlling so many things. He has to be available for call-in or for, you know, your different types of emergencies. He says, so you did all of that. And you didn't get one dime for that. But you were on top of it, you were enthusiastic, and you were sharp. But for Krishna, you can't have any money. It's all a matter of priority. But what he's missing is that then Krishna won't look at all that and revive it. So the same ones who have trouble carrying something through, if it's something that's important to you, is your children, is your house, if it's some clothes you want, or some jewelry you want, or whatever. If it's something that's important to you, you put so much energy, and you are persistent into it actually happening. But then, if it's the guru's request, and you feel imposed upon, you feel, you know, why do you understand that I'll do it in the next week? Or, you know, we have to ask 3 or 4 times. You know. I was talking to Aj yesterday. I was completely amazed. He says, why you got to be called 5 or 6 times before you respond? You know. and get on the secretary and ask him why you don't have any clarity. But then you're getting called and message. I said, at least call and let someone know something. Even if you haven't done this, if you're not going to do it, at least call and let it be known so that there's some clarity. As such. Or you have any other organizers complaining about, the videos. Not that you're just taking a video, it's that you are arranging for thousands of people to be able to hear the message. If you say, I didn't take it because I didn't have transportation. And so it goes on for weeks and weeks and weeks. If you want to go somewhere yourself, you find a way to get transportation. But this means that I didn't take that thing serious. Or this is something you want me to do, and I'll do it, when it's convenient to do it, then I'll do it. Or I will do it when I feel the inspiration to do it. We go to a job and we tell a person, so when I feel inspiration, I'll type this thing. We have some work we have to do. We say, okay, let's put it aside now. I've marked it out. I'll work on that when I feel the inspiration. So that means our material life is our priority. And therefore, we get more and more of that same stuff. So. Well, this ought to be expected, in one sense, because, we're addicted to selfishness. And that's the disease. So now we're trying to work out that disease. And in no way is anybody asked to, just abandon, your health, abandon your children, abandon your wife, abandon your husband, abandon your house, abandon your car, abandon your job. Nobody's asking that. Yes, you to be healthy. Mature, take care of your stuff. You lose it, what can we say? But the idea is that, how to manage these things, but at the same time you see that your priority is your spiritual life. How you are arranging everything so that you can guarantee that you're healthily following the principles, that you're making some contribution to conscious raising. And seeing other stuff is facility to allow you to be able to do that. Any last question? But see, I'm around enough now that should be very clear. But at the same time, it's not necessary, it shouldn't be that I should have to be kind of reminding devotees about these kind of things. Because that should come from the coordinators. And the devotees should come from the devotees to each other also. We haven't seen somebody in a while. It's not that the coordinators should be the ones have to necessarily call them all the time. Somebody else would come and say, well, what is your trip? I want to come down that terminology. But we should say, I haven't seen you, in a month or two. Is there a problem? Have you been sick? Or is there something I can help to do? Have you been getting the tapes? You just keeping up? Would you just be concerned in that sense? Because we may have periods where we have something similar, some difficult period in our life. And the problem is that, because we're here now, and this is no more difficult for people to come, there's no reason why we shouldn't have so many more people. But all of you, have contact, your friends, your associates, you have influence, and you can preach something. So why are we not having more people? We should be having so many more people who need. Like Brahma, in his 5 minutes of realization. He was saying, it's amazing, I was watching the TV show. And so we were discussing him. So some people, they talk about, travels. So you're traveling because people are interested in meeting important people, meeting important people. People are so interested in knowing, about culture. So you're talking about ancient culture. People are so interested in knowing about, mystical things, magic. You're talking about that. His spiritual consciousness, it actually includes everything. It's a matter of how we use it. On the first show, there were, news reporters. They were talking about worldliness. And then there was people talking about, women in prison. And then there was people talking about Cuba. But actually, spiritual consciousness, it's very crucial because it lets us know what's the bottom line of all that stuff. Why is there this problem and that problem? But if we don't use it, then, you know what? You know what to do with it now. what we're doing as devotees is actually is awesome. It's an awesome thing. But if, you know, we have to figure out what is this extraterrestrial thing. What's going on in leadership? Maybe it should be the Republican Party, the Democratic Party. People are just so confused. They want to blame their problems on others. They're trying to scapegoat. Maybe the problem is there's too many immigrants coming to America now. Maybe this, maybe that, you know. Blacks want to blame whites. Whites want to blame blacks. Youth want to blame their elders. The elders want to blame it. It's crazy youth. Everybody wants to blame somebody. But you want to figure out, well, what's really the problem? Mm-hmm. They don't understand. The devotees know. It's like having a sickness and you know something wrong, but you don't know what it is, so it's bewildering. But when you find out, then you can work on it better. So we have all this knowledge, but then we don't use it so well. And we should understand that in war, you have some casualties. So there's some people who are not going to be able to keep up. It's going to be a few like that, but what can we do? We have to try to minimize that. There are going to be some who are not going to want to make the necessary change in their life, no one going to direct their priorities, and so they're going to fall to the sidelines to some extent. They will be the most sad, because when they have to meet Yamaraj, they'll be very sad because they'll notice they have this opportunity, that opportunity, so much chance within them. They'll be very sad. Mm-hmm.
Like you said, these are very interesting times, and when I was watching, I was looking at the news and I saw the videotapes in the hotel of the last moment, so to speak, of Princess Diana. And I was sitting there thinking that it was an interesting parallel that, you know, Krishna arranged with Mother Teresa and her life and around the same time period. I was looking, wow, you know, she's been in this and college.
They showed, in the hotel they showed she was hanging
well,
out.
Well, she was with, you know,
her boyfriend.
Her boyfriend. Oh. And they had switched hotels and they're staying in this, you know, home, this elaborate hotel. And they're coming down out of their room and, you know, the hotel video cameras are taking them. And they're trying to slide out of the back door to avoid the news cameras. But in my mind, I'm thinking, wow, these are the last, and that's how they were saying, you know, the last moments, the last moments she's spending before her death. And what is she doing? You know, what is her activity? You know? And so it, you know, Krishna is just giving us, you know, such, you know, stark realities in terms of, you know, what time it is and us not knowing what our moment will be and what is the last thing, you know, what is the last activity we're participating in, last thing in our consciousness before we meet with that, you know, that situation of making a transition. And the other thing I wanted to comment on, and I don't exclude myself because I'm equally as guilty, is in terms of, our motivation and stamina and consistency and devotional service. I just noticed, Mother Loka was speaking about personal responsibility, and I'll take another step in terms of accountability. There just doesn't seem to be a system of accountability within Krishna consciousness. As she was saying, that it's kind of within other spiritual groups. I know I was talking to one devotee here who was saying that even with Sri Chinmoy's group, which is a Baptist of the service, that if the devotees didn't follow through on the service, they were literally put out. And that was the motivating force to keep them, you know, sort of connected and you know, on task in terms of their service. And so I'm wondering in terms of that, because, you know, even the calling, you know, devoting, the way we deal with them, you know, is really deteriorating. Maybe we didn't get enough instructions around, you know, devotee ethics. But, you know, the calling to check that you're imposing, that, you know, you're bombarding with phone calls. And, you know, if you call and remind about a service that someone has scheduled for, you know, you get, you know, a flare-up. And all of these things are going on. Mm-hmm. And then there's not a system to deal with, mm-hmm. you know, devotees who are having this kind of struggle or just exhibiting this kind of behavior. It just goes on and on and it deteriorates, you know, to, you know, we're always dealing with, you know, a consciousness of a kindness, you know, in the way that we're relating to each other.
It's the same answer. We have to see that things are accelerating. But in many cases, we have to try to be able to hopefully bond a little bit more with the individual who's going through that. Because usually those are symptoms of something else that's happening before the mind. There are several cases where some devotees are not being so, not participating so well, or not taking too many things seriously. Because there's so much other stuff going on in the night. Some problems in some areas. In some cases, if we can start talking a little more, we can help, I'll help you understand that and tell you maybe even help to be there, assist them based on that, give some clarity. In some other cases, it's just a matter that, you know, there's not a serious priority about the spiritual commitment. Not seriously. Yeah. People, you know, have different, you know, just look at each of you and you can think of some things that's going on in your life that's giving you some stress and some problems that you may not, you know, kind of share or talk about so much, some things you do. So some individuals have more difficulty in dealing with, obviously, adversity. But I was listening to a business tech the other day, and they were trying to put together a formula for how to evaluate one's strength in dealing with adversity. Because they were evaluating very successful business people. And they were looking at some of the business schools and realizing that many of the conceptions they had in the past weren't so proper. Because someone may be a very bright student, but if they don't have the strength, or if they're not strongly dealing with adversity, then 10, 15 years later, you'll find the person will not be as successful. Somebody who is a mediocre student, but who was very good in dealing with the adversity. You'll find that that person who was strongly dealing with adversity somehow has become a much higher achiever and now has a multi-million-dollar corporation compared to the other person who just, you know, a couple $100,000, you know, is taking place. Because one, you know, just saw adversity as opportunity or was quick and clear in dealing with it and then moved on. The other became, you know, more of an obstacle. Some of our devotees still not learning how to, you know, how to deal with adversity. And then they go in and look at themselves, and then they act in ways that are unhealthy based on their pain. So I wrote that chapter, that section of the book, and asked Mother Mandara to bring out a little more about seeing everything as a call for love. So whatever problems a person is having, instead of looking only at that manifested problem, you think, in what area there seemed to be some lacking of the love factor. So this is some perverted call that's based on some loving situation that somehow is what is you're really being represented. If somebody's envious, then you really see it, not just envy. You see that the love they feel should be coming for them is going to someone else. Well, they feel it's going to someone else. So the expression means that they're not wanting their love, but they're showing enviousness or jealousy. Not really the issue of not being jealousy and envious. Instead, they're feeling that what is needed for them is not sufficiently coming from where the source is for that projection. So some of these things, if we look at it a little bit more, and we have to, you know, address it. But if we look at it this way a little bit more, and in some cases, we can bring out some of the better quality of a person. And even when Krishna himself is on the planet, some people are still devious. And so it's not that there's, you know, just by having the right idea, you can change everybody. You know. But some people will be changed as we understand their situation. And we should approach it like that. Instead of just, why you didn't do this, or why you didn't do that, you know, we should also approach it with the mood of, you know, is there something I can do? Or is there some particular problem that's going on? Sometimes they always be willing, sometimes they won't. But it can help them to think about it. The other thing is that many times people have these problems and they themselves are not aware of how harsh they're acting, or they're not aware of how something that's going on in life is causing them to be affected in a certain way. And then you bring it, you know, to their attention, you have to think about it.
just thinking that we're dealing with people here at the Institute. We're first dealing with our own mindsets. And constantly getting feedback, I know, from every relationship in mine. Am I going to fall into my consciousness if another devotee is in a bad space? I was just thinking about you. You're dealing with devotees all over the world, and probably many serious people who have been turned away, maybe just coming back.
So well, that seems to be.
And so I was thinking, well, how you may see people from different, who are in different mentalities all the time, yet you still have to maintain a Christian consciousness, which means you can't be affected by that, or you'd be taking all that burden. So I was thinking here at the Institute, or even in the world, and each one of us from the world, we come across so many different people, so many different states of mind. I was thinking about the TAB job. I have people coming in there who are in all kinds of different states of consciousness. I take it as my responsibility to first maintain my own Krishna consciousness, which means not being weakened by another person's burdens, but yet somehow responding to help them overcome their burden. And I see that here at the Institute, that one area that we need work in is that, you know, we might identify that person as not committed or in Maya, and somehow getting absorbed in their problem and being part of the problem and not the solution. And so what I've committed to, of course, is to strengthen my sadhana, to try to help, you know, not only devotees here, but of course not going to be in contact, but help but not weaken myself by identifying with their state of mind and being part of that.
It's very key, is that identification situation. So you can be on the team, be in a crew, and you already identify with people who went out to the mark, and you start taking on, you constantly start taking on some of the same anxieties, some of the same stagnations. You know, some of the same piece of cynicism. The working in group is a very powerful thing. It's very imposing, it's very delicate also, because everybody's affecting everybody. So, any last question? But we should not mean this. I mentioned to Dhammavati and to Madhava, when I saw this doctor the other day, and he was, you know, homeopathic doctor. And I am with this. And so, you know, this doctor supposed to somebody who has some systems for dealing with things that other people can't. There's a lot of homeopathic. A lot of the naturopaths are. We had a machine that could evaluate every part of the body. And so it could give you a printout. It just, what is weak, what is disease, what is likely to become, you know, weakened. And so you can look at all the organs there. And so my case was obviously, you know, bewildering. And then I talked with them and I explained, you know, what I do, my image, etc. And he said, well, you know, I wouldn't really say this to most people, but he said, I think you could. I said, I'm sure you understand it. He says, your problem is physical. He said, it's physical aspect is there, but he said also there's a subtle aspect. And the subtle aspect is that, is it interesting to you that you eliminate more than you take in? He said, yes. He said, in your work you must have to counsel a lot of people. You have to deal with a lot of different people, a lot of problems and things. And a lot of people, a lot of different consciousness. He said, so the energy aspect, the subtle aspect, is that you are constantly having to eliminate nonsense, or you're constantly having to eliminate stagnant energies or you know, the parasites in that sense of people's disappointment, their energy, they're putting things on you that you have to eliminate. So therefore that's the subtle part. He said, so we can treat this physical part, he said, but you know, subtle part, he said, I don't know what to do. And I explained to him, that one I have no control of, because in the most part I have, as a guru, I have to, if I give someone initiation, then I have to, I have to plug into them, they have to plug into me. And so what they think, what they do, what they don't do, becomes a part of my, you know, my metabolism and consciousness and force field in that way. So I was kind of, it was kind of interesting, you know, that he's, you know, he's not a Vaishnava, but he has some understanding of just energy exchanges. Because he was a guru, he was, you know, he feed me for like hours, you know. He was just trying different things, and he was, you know, he put different medicines together, and then would evaluate it to see how I would adjust the system. And so, you know, we would stay there for about 4 hours, and just kind of devoted on the patients and kept everything waiting. He was very kind, very, answered all my questions, and, you know. And he was a chiropractor also, just my body in different ways. But then he was just kind of, you know, a little bewildered. He talked to me, he gave me something for the physical aspect, and he will try. Then he says, yeah, this is amazing. How do you eliminate so much? I told him, he must not even drink. Or eat, but I don't eat that much once a day. I eat healthy, but once a day in most cases. And he was, and he's like, he says, this is a good way to eat. It was strange that what it's got to do with anything. He said, you should, I think you can understand, but I'm sure you understand this. So that means that we should be thinking that even if somebody else is not doing their stuff, that I'm not going to add to the guru's inconvenience, disturbance. I'm not going to add to my guru's sickness or my guru's not being able to do sufficient what he's supposed to do for his guru and for the world. It doesn't take many people, we just take it seriously. We want a lot of people involved so a lot of people can benefit. But it doesn't take a lot of people to do the work we have to do. We want you all to kind of be able to reach more people will get the benefit of having a transcendental connection to offset a lot of their karmic stuff. It doesn't take many people to do what it has to be done. So, Krishna can just arrange some of the most amazing things just for him and for the people. And like Margaret Mead says, that the only thing that's ever changed society and changed the world is just been a few people. It's not that it's been many people that causes big change to happen. It's always been there. You know, it's a minority and other people. So. But I'm trying to get a handle on it because I can see that the health thing is deteriorating very fast. I realize what the kind of thing we have to do in the little time that we have. Energy level is important to have a high energy level and clarity of perception and health. So I'm looking at these things. But we have to, you know, just realize that everybody's going to affect whatever ultimately happens. And we all have our part to do. And all of you take initiation to realize that you've made a contract. With that contract, there's accountability. You're accountable and the guru is accountable. But give me initiation, the guru is like, introduce you to the Prabhupada system. So you do certain things, the Prabhupada system is looking at, well, you're the caretaker, so you gotta be accountable for this and that and that. So it's a sweet thing that we use it properly, but at the same time, you know, it's a dangerous thing. That's the difference between material and spiritual. Material leadership means you get more benefits, you enjoy more, others just struggle, and you enjoy. Spiritual leadership, whether it's brahminical, sannyas, or guru, that you're supposed to be able to show more by example, and the weight of the difficulties that come on the, you know, on the leadership. It's completely different from the two. It's gone from the charge of divine grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami, A.C. Bhattopadhyay, A.C. Raha Gopina, Jana Father Gauri Taiki. So my one devotee is to stay for, you know, just a short while. You see, to have a devotee meeting.
What time is it?
It's 10
o'clock.
10 o'clock.
So maybe a half hour.